The seemingly unremarkable criminal complaint that sent Client 9, a.k.a. New York Governor Eliot Spitzer, into early retirement uses a number-letter combination to lay out two key charges against those accused of running a prostitution ring. Title 18, Sections 2421 and 2422A. That statute also has a name. It's known as the Mann Act, and that's man with a double N for those who enjoy wordplay. It's the federal statute, originally called the Mann-White Slave Traffic Act, that makes transportation for illegal sexual activity and related crimes a crime in itself. It used to read this way, words reported by an early court. Any person who shall aid or assist in procuring any ticket or any form of transportation to be used by any girl or woman in interstate commerce in going to any place for the purpose of prostitution or debauchery or for any immoral purpose shall be deemed guilty of a felony. If prostitution is the world's oldest profession, the Mann Act is relatively new to the game. Congress passed the law in 1910. The statute's still around, not only because recent events seem to indicate that we're still in need of it, but because the United States Supreme Court upheld the law very early on, in 1913, in a case in which one Effie Hoke and a male accomplice unlawfully, feloniously, and knowingly persuaded one Annette Baden, alias Annette Hayes, a woman, to go from New Orleans to Beaumont, Texas, for the purpose of, well, you know. The defendants had argued that the Mann Act was unconstitutional because, among other things, people have certain rights to behave in certain ways. The justices found that Congress had the power to enact such a law and responded simply, "Persons' rights cannot fortify or sanction their wrongs." That was only one of the early cases in which the High Court heard and promptly discounted defendants' attacks on the Mann Act, fortifying a law that would lead many years later to a complaint containing the tantalizing stories of 10 numbered clients. The opinions often read like stories from old detective magazines. When some defendants had argued that the police had used the wrong names in the indictment in one case, changing Murdy to Nellie and Estelle to Stella, in what perhaps was that generation's versions of Kristen, the justices upheld the convictions. A later case, one in which the plaintiffs had argued that they could not be guilty of violating the Mann Act because they transported a 17-year-old to live the life of a simple chorus girl, found the justices dwelling on the question of the defendant's ultimate intent and whether this charge to a jury was proper. What was the intent with which they brought her? That she should live an honest, moral, and proper life? Or that she came and they engaged and contracted with her for the purpose of her entering a condition which might be termed debauchery? The justices found the defendant's criminal convictions perfectly proper, crediting the girl with similar propriety, resisting the allure of another, coarser route in life. The statutory language and the language in the cases and indictments that stem from it aren't as flowery today, reported only as a number-letter combination in a recent key filing. But the same idea behind the original statute remains. And come to think of it, the same colorful underlying facts sometimes remain, as the Eliot Spitzer saga makes clear. I'm Amy Guida.